May I assume that you're not reserving any time for rebuttal?
No, I wrote at the top of this, I'm not going to reserve any time for rebuttal, but I concluded it would be inappropriate to say that. But I thank you very much.
Well, it does address an interesting issue of the case, and somewhere along the line I'm sure you're going to deal with it, and that is, with nobody on the other side of this question, should the court appoint a guardian or have some vehicle by which another view is actually heard? And you can deal with that at any time you want. You don't have to follow that just because I raised it at this appropriate time when there's nobody sitting there. You can raise it whenever you want.
Well, we raised the failure to appoint a guardian, so certainly we would address it. My view about this is that the statutory scheme for an award by a jury is 801-54C, and it simply says that the personal representative shall distribute the amount awarded to the beneficiary by the personal representative. Stop, full stop, end of discussion. That's the only statute here. There are two other statutes.
May I interrupt you briefly?
Certainly. If you didn't interrupt me, I would be totally unprepared for this hearing.
Good. Going back to the Chief's question, your second assignment of error is that the children are necessary parties and JL should be appointed for them and should have been appointed in the trial court. Well, if that's true, so assume hypothetically you're exactly right, that either they have to be or should be. Why wouldn't it also be true here, and why wouldn't it make a little more sense for us to appoint guardians to represent the children and then rehear the argument at a time in which we have at least an independent voice, whether it's in favor of your argument or against your argument, on behalf of the minors?
Well, the first answer to the question is 801-54C doesn't make the appointment of a guardian ad litem appropriate or necessary. Full stop. Personal representative pays it to the beneficiary. Case is done.
No, I don't mean a JAL for purposes of receiving the money. I mean a JAL for purposes of advocating the children's, the minors' interest before this court. Because if I understand the logic of your argument, you're saying that's what should have happened in the trial court.
No, that should never have gotten that far in the trial court. That's the first point. But if it did get that far, then our argument is that the children were necessary parties to the proceeding, and the only way they could be necessary parties, or they should have had a GAL. One could argue, appropriately, I think, that the parents would stand in those shoes. You've got two statutes that I end up citing in this argument.
Well, by law, of course, the parents are the lawful guardians.
Correct. And they are also the personal representatives, and they are the ones who are paying for this appeal.
But now, it seems to me the purest view that you have is that they don't need guardians, they have parents.
That's correct.
And the purest view of your case is that you pay it out according to the statute.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
The irony of it all is that if you had this verdict, and there would be obviously a bit of agreement between the opposing sides, they said, no, I'm not going to accept, $300,000 to one of them? I'm not going to accept that. I want $299,999.99, and that'll be a settlement. Oh, now you've got an infant settlement, all right? And so you're under a different statute.
I'm under a completely different statute.
And the irony of it all is that it's within 1 cent of each other, and the distribution, according to you, and you have a pretty good argument, would be different under an infant settlement than it is under the wrongful death statute.
That's my position.
Doesn't the circuit court have a duty to look out for the interests of the infants, regardless of whether it was a settlement or a jury award? That's just how this pot of money was created for the children.
In two statutes, it does. In 80155 and in 424. They do. There's no question about that. But they don't here. This statute's in derogation of common law. It's to be strictly construed. It's not in this court's nature to write the law. And that's what you would end up having to do here.
Suppose the trial judge, you know, there was some back and forth between you. You were trial counsel, correct?
I was.
There was back and forth between you and the trial judge about what was going to happen with his money, and the judge was concerned about a bond and was concerned about when the boys would get the money. Suppose the father's plan was, Judge, trust me, I am a whiz at day trading, and I'm going to take this money, and by the time those boys are 18, this $500,000 plus is going to be triple that.
This
is the judge just supposed to say, okay, good
luck? This is what drives me crazy about this case, I'm be really frank. Because if I'm wrong on 801-54C, the question is that the judge abuses discretion in not letting us get this money. Well, let me read what I wrote. Just assuming arguendo, the trial court patently abused its discretion by, one, failing to appoint a guardian for the children, failing to give us an evidentiary hearing, completely disregarding the practical effect of ordering the money be paid into court to be invested at 0.1% over what? 12 years and 6 years. Imagine this. Imagine if I brought a suit to have that trustee removed, and my evidence was that the trustee intended to invest these funds at 0.1% for the next 12 and 6 years, respectively, that the account in which he was going to invest the money was more than the FDIC insurance. I got a $500,000 account that he's putting in SunTrust Bank with a $250,000 FDIC insurance. That practically every provision of the Uniform Prudent Investor Act was violated. There's absolutely no diversification. And go back to my authority issue. The trust gave no authority to handle the funds in this manner. How quick would you throw this trustee out into the streets? Not to mention that this trust is thoughtful and sophisticated in its approach. For example, professional management. A prohibition of spending funds for expenses, normally the responsibility of the parents.
But that was put in after the judge spotted that and said, you need to change that.
But you see, your point
is... So the judge has had some role in this. He's looking out for the best interests of the children.
Well, I invited him under the tent, unfortunately.
That's the curious part. Why did you?
I've known Judge Curran before he went on the bench. In my wildest imagination, I would not have dreamed he would be here. And I'll tell you what was on my mind. The parents have the money. We know that we shouldn't hand $500,000, $750,000 to the children at age 18. Mr. Reed and I had a case 3 years ago where a 17-year-old T-boned somebody, our client, rendered her paraplegic. This case happens that way. I walk into court with Mr. Reed and say to the clerk, give me that money. So I am all focused on how can I protect this money from the children's creditors. And I've got this qualified, self-settled trust provision of the code that any adult can apply, and I want to apply it, but it's self-settled, and can a child self-settle it? And my brain says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get Judge Curran, because he's got good sense, to approve this thing, and I'm going to be home free. And the other problem I've got is I have children and have been through their adolescent years, and you can't turn money like this over to a child at 18 years old. And really, to your point, I think the judge had to have some evidence before him that the parents were going to get off the reservation, that they weren't going to do the right thing.
That's really the irony, because you were trying to establish that my two parents are not the day traders, They're not going to frivolously go to Vegas and spend all this money. We're locking it up in a trust where the independent fiduciary has no interest in the matter, and yet the judge says, sorry, I'm just going to give it to the clerk and sit on.
Look, the judge writes at page 123, I think he's assuming y'all might take this writ, that his record invites the point. I invite the court's attention. Point two, he says to that opinion, it's on page 123, that it would be expensive to solicit proposals from multiple institutions. This would be expensive for a small fund. Well, all I can tell you is I knew Judge Kern when he thought $700,000 was not a small fund. And then point three, he says, the court says paying the money into court is a safe haven. What kind of safe haven invests money at less than the rate of inflation, requires funds to be invested in an account not fully insured, and he's so worried about Middleburg's bond, it deviates from standards of the Uniform Prudent Investor Act. And at point three, he suggests that asking a trustee headquartered in Richmond to be able to respond to emergency requests is much more burdensome than the family walking into court, filing a petition to have its funds that are under the court's control released so that some emergency can be responded to. And that, I just don't know where Judge Kern, I do know where Judge Kern is coming from. What we see in our office and what he sees on the bench and probably what you saw on the bench is what comes before the court are irresponsible parents frittering the money away.
Well, I've seen plenty of that in my time. So, I know what the judge is getting at. I'm concerned that the ruling that you're asking us to make would mean that no judge could ever step in when this is a jury award in a wrongful death case with minor beneficiaries and the parents are irresponsible or have the risk of being irresponsible. The day trader, the Las Vegas denizen who wants to parlay this money, and the judge wants to make sure the money is there for the boys when they get to be 18.
I think that the legislature, not the court, should impose that duty on the court to inquire. This court's got no idea what... This court does have an idea, but putting that aside...
But the legislature has in other statutes...
They have in other statutes, so you would think that if they wanted you to do it here, they would. They have in other... No question. No question they have in other statutes. And they have allowed exactly what we asked for here.
This question is not meant to be critical, so please don't misunderstand it, all right? Do I understand that you initiated this because it might protect the lawyers who were about to pay this over?
Oh, no. Absolutely.
Why didn't you just pay it over?
Oh, because I wanted to...
I'd be concerned about it if I was practicing law. I don't mind telling you.
The statute says the personal representatives pay it to the beneficiaries. When we got this case initially, we had a big discussion with these people about the kind of award that we might get and what this would mean in their life. And they agreed 5 years before we tried this case that their funds would be professionally managed. This money...
Well, it may be that you agreed that it would be professionally managed. But what does the statute say you're supposed to do with it?
Turn it over. I was greedy. I wanted the court to put its stamp of approval on that qualified, self-settled, spendthrift trust.
So
I was greedy.
Now we're getting back to my initial question.
It wasn't to protect me. It was to protect the children.
Well,
I would do what the statute says. I'm okay with that.
What you're suggesting is that you might be subject to criticism, maybe even legal action, if you didn't do it. It's a sympathetic position. I understand why you feel that way. Particularly all of us understand, because we've seen what happens when it goes south. So what do we do? What do you want us to do?
Well, I'm prepared for that question. My bride of 50 years said to me, good luck this morning, but I assume there's no lawyer on the other side, you won't need any luck. I said, well, Judge Kern is on the other side. She said, well, how did Bob get lost? Because we know him. Our children grew up with him. I said, well, he's on the other side, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to rule that 801-54C is the end of the discussion. That's the end of the discussion.
Which requires the court to pay the funds, not to the children, but to the personal representative.
That's right.
And not even to the family members, but to the personal representative.
Personal representative. That's all the statute says, and that's what you say. Now, because I'm inherently greedy, I guess, is I would love for you to say that the court should approve our trust, but I don't want you to do that. I don't want it to go back to the trust. I'll take the risk. I will take the risk. The family will take the risk to do the right thing.
All right. I think we do understand your position pretty clearly.
No, you certainly do.
And your time has expired. Call the next case.